Grace and peace to you all, and welcome to the Calvary Road with Pastor Sam Allen.
The centurion at the cross, surely this was a righteous man. Judas, I've betrayed innocent blood. Pilate, I find no fault in this man. The thief on the cross, we deserve what we're getting. He's done nothing wrong. They all saw it, you see. Jesus was doing it right, and because he did, and now he's saying, abide in me. Walk with me, be intimate with me, and I can make this happen in and through you.
Only with Jesus. Only with you.
Hello and welcome. In today's broadcast, we have part two of Pastor Sam's message, A New Commandment. We're in 1 John chapter 2, looking at verses 3 through 11. Herein, John puts forth the idea that if we truly know Jesus, we're going to obey him. And while our obedience is a test of knowing him, it is in knowing him that makes it so we can obey him. He gives us that ability. So let's listen in and learn more.
Who in their right mind would get married and then think, well, let's just keep this on a legal basis. So what are the rules going to be here? Okay, what can't I do exactly? What time do I have to do this and where do I have to be? And none of us, I hope you're not living that way with each other, because I got to tell you, that would be a miserable existence. You said you'd be home at 8 o'clock and it's 8:01. I know that does happen. I hope you've worked through it. If you haven't, do it because the deal is, it's not about laws or rules or of course we want to honor one another and care for one another, but that's all a love relationship, a loving response. It's not you broke our rules. I don't do the right thing because I'm afraid of the consequence of doing the wrong thing. I do the right thing because I love my wife. I love my kids. I love this fellowship and the opportunity to be an example to it and a teacher in the midst. And so I'm trying to please God. But it's not about the law, not for me. Now he's going to say we can't just ignore it. We can't ignore his commandments. But we'll get back to those in a minute. Well, if keeping God's law isn't enough to make us acceptable or get us to the throne of God, what do you think is going to happen to people who are disregarding God's law and kind of making up their own? Listen how Jesus responds to those. This is in Matthew 15:8. These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Jesus is just saying men that try to live by God's law fail, and men who try to live by their own law are even then further away from those who are trying to live by God's law. Well, John's concern here, and I don't want to, you know, fail to get to it, isn't for those who might be trying to do those things. I just bring that to your attention because if that's where you're at, I don't want you to misunderstand and leave here thinking, okay, I'll obey Jesus and then he'll love me and then he'll accept me and then I'll be saved. No, first you realize he loves you. He died for you to prove it. You give your life to him and then he empowers you to obey him. But you never want to reverse the order of those things. Well, again, he goes on to tell us here in verse 3 that those of us who claim to know Jesus can prove it by simply obeying him. And as I already shared, Jesus asked, why say Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? Now, I do want to say that it's possible to obey some of God's commands, even in our own strength. In other words, the Bible says we're not to lie. And I have known many people in my life that weren't Christians, that certainly weren't born again and didn't even see the need for it. They were honest people. I mean, not every non-Christian is, you know, some kind of horrific sinner, though all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And so I'm just saying you can be honest and not be a Christian. If you were a drunk and you realize, man, this is damaging my health and my relationships, and you could go to AA and sober up and never drink again. And, you know, the Bible says we're not to be drunk. So you could say, okay, I don't lie and I don't steal and I don't get drunk and I don't commit adultery and I don't do this and I don't do that and I don't do that. And you might think, well, hey, I am obeying God's law. He has to be pretty pleased with all this. But here's the problem. Those are the kinds of things we can do in and of ourselves. Here are a couple things Jesus commands us to do. And they're right along the lines of the new commandments. So this is leading us into the heart of the study. Listen to what Jesus says in Matthew 5:43. You've heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I don't know, you know, who came up with that, but that was what was floating around in religious circles first century. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Now, I would suggest these are the commands he's commanding us to obey. Well, there are more, but this is core and central. Why? Because he's saying, by this we can know that we know him, that we keep his commandments. And the commandment, the new commandment, is going to be to love one another as I've loved you. We'll come back to it, but here's the point. First of all, I am not able in and of myself, while I can tell the truth and I can certainly keep myself from drinking, and I can certainly keep myself from stealing, I'm capable of those things even apart from Christ. I am not capable of loving my enemies. I had trouble even loving the people closest to me. Once I realized what love is biblically, in all honesty, loving my enemies, blessing those who curse me, this doesn't come natural to me. And if you think it's natural to you, it's not. It's a supernatural response. It's a spiritual response. Let's face it. Let's be honest. If we have enemies, we want to get them back. If people curse us, well, we want to give them a piece of our mind. Do good to those who hate you. Who but Jesus ever taught such a thing? Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Now, see, I need to be born again, filled with the Spirit, abiding in Jesus, walking in the light, walking in truth, walking in love. All the things John's been telling me I must do, obeying his commandments, or this kind of stuff just can't happen. And by the way, there's another side to this. I've shared it in the past. Some of you know. Unless you've actually experienced hatred for, you know, you doing good, or you've blessed and people have cursed you, and then God's saying, bless them again. Or you've done good and they've hated you. And well, when that happens to us, most of us are like, I don't get this at all. All I did, or all I said, or I just tried to help, and man, I got all this back. Well, Jesus said, if they hated me, they'll hate you. I don't know why we're shocked when that turns out to be true. We should expect it. And the other thing is, if you never had an enemy, if you never had anyone curse you, if you've never had anyone hate you or spitefully use you or persecute you, you don't even have opportunity to obey these commands. Now, don't misunderstand. I'm not suggesting you go out and make enemies just so you can obey Jesus and love them. No, if you're living for Jesus, if you're obeying Jesus, you will be making enemies. You will. He says, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus, this is Paul writing, will suffer persecution. It just comes with the territory. So the more I become like Jesus, the more I respond like Jesus, the more I see that people don't really appreciate that. They don't really understand it. And instead of saying, wow, what a great guy you are, they say all sorts of other stuff. And he's saying in response, my response has to be loving, blessing, doing good, praying. Mom, the bottom line is, if we do those things, he says that's going to provide, well, what he wants, a witness for them. And he says, here's another reason to do it, that we may be sons of our Father in heaven, children of God. And he's not saying this will make us children of God, but it will demonstrate that we are. In the very same way John's saying, hey, this is how we know him. We're keeping his commandments. So I'm doing what Jesus says. And he says he, and he's our example, he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and the unjust. And then Jesus asks, if we love those who love us, what reward have we? He says, that's common. Almost everybody does that. And he picks in that day, of all the people you could be and be disliked and disregarded, it would be a tax collector. Now, they may not be at the top of our fond list today, you know. But in those days, tax collectors were traitors because they were working for Rome and they were taking advantage of their own people, and they were, most of them, lining their pockets and getting wealthy at the suffering of an oppressed people, their own people. So they were hated. And he says, listen, even tax collectors love their own. Even tax collectors do good to those who do good to them, greet their own brethren. But he's saying, you need to be perfect. You shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Well, again, these kind of commands, they require divine enablement. So when John tells us earlier, we've got to abide or walk in the light or walk in truth or walk in love or walk in the Spirit. Of course. And he said in chapter 2, verse 5, back here in 1 John, by this we know that we are in him. He who says he abides in him ought to walk just as he walked. How did Jesus walk? He walked in the light. He walked in truth. He walked in love. He walked in the Spirit. And then he says, and you can see it, this is how we can be sure that Jesus is in us and we're in him. James tells us we have to be doers of the word and not hearers only, not deceiving. Or if we don't, we are deceiving ourselves. Well, the heart of this particular section is this section, verses 7 and 8, dealing with the new commandment. And John, well, he says something and then he appears to contradict himself. So we'll deal with that, but we'll deal with really where he's going with this. Brethren, I write to you, he says, no new commandment, but an old which you've had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you've heard from the beginning. Again, a new commandment I write to you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. Now, the old commandment, I believe, is the greatest commandment. When Jesus was asked, which commandment is the greatest? He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. And he said, the second's like it, love your neighbor as yourself. In these, he says, all of the law and the prophets are fulfilled. So he's saying all the thou shall nots are fulfilled in two thous. Love God and love one another. But then John says a new commandment. The only other place besides 1 John where you read those words, a new commandment, well, they came from the lips of Jesus, and John just happened to be there that day, you see. And Jesus says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you love one another. Now, this commandment comes with the promise. He says, by this all will know you're my disciples if you have love for one another. That's why I went back to his saying, we've got to love our neighbor and we've got to love our enemies and we've got to bless and we've got to pray and do good, because that's a demonstration of love that they get, that will be a testimony to them. Well, in any case, the old commandment, love God and love others. What's new about this one? Jesus says, I want you to love one another the way I've loved you. And I jotted just three ways. There are far more. You could make a list, and there are dozens of ways that Jesus demonstrated his love to his disciples. And here's why this is so important. He not only demonstrated it to them, he's demonstrated it to us. And now he's saying, I want you to love one another this same way. He loved them, he loves us, and wants us to love one another practically. Secondly, he loved them, loves us, and wants us to love one another sacrificially. Then he loved them, loves us, and wants us to love one another observably. Practically, yeah. He protected them when they were in danger. He provided for them when they were in need. You know, whenever Jesus' disciples were accosted or troubled or, you know, accused, Jesus stepped right up, stepped right in. And he still does that. He did it for them. He does it for us. And he's saying, really, we want to do the same thing. Protect those around us that are in danger. Well, even at his arrest, and I don't know if you remember the story, if you're newer to all this, it's fascinating because they come to arrest Jesus. He's in the garden. He just got done praying with his disciples and instructing them and celebrating the Passover and washing their feet. And they go out to the garden and he's praying there, and they come, the enemies, the soldiers. They've got their lanterns. They've got their swords and spears. It's this big hoopla. And as they come, he says, who do you seek? And they say, Jesus of Nazareth. And we're told he said, I am. And they fell back at the declaration of those words, I am. Same words that God told Moses to use to say, hey, who sent me? Who should I say sent me? Tell them I am sent you. Well, Jesus says it and the soldiers fall back. And then he says, you're here for me. Let these guys go. Now, I've never been on an arrest with any of the officers in our church, but there are a lot of them. And I'm pretty sure that if they show up at a house and they're there to arrest some people and they get the first guy and he's like, okay, you can take me, but all of these guys get to go free. That's not going to happen, you see. And in essence, that's what Jesus is doing. He's saying, okay, you can have me, but they all go free. And I'm thinking, even at that point, even when he's being arrested, even, well, in the midst of all of it, he was still protecting them. He provided for them. When they were hungry, he provided food. When they were weary, he provided rest. When they were in need of taxes, and every April, I think of this illustration, they needed taxes, and he tells Peter, hey, go catch a fish. You'll find a coin in the mouth. I'm like, Lord, I'm so into fishing right now. Could you just one more time do something like that? But the deal is he is providing for us, even as he provided then. But what's he saying? Love as I've loved you. Protect the innocent around us. Love and provide for those in need. And then he led and instructed them. And I like this. You know, Luke tells us these things Jesus began to do and teach. He was an example first and an instructor secondly. And if you're a parent, you know the power of example. And maybe you grew up hearing words like this, don't do what I do, do what I say. I got to tell you, they'll do what you do. That's just the way it's going to be. And so we've got to be an example. He was the example. He led and he instructed. And I don't know if you're aware, you can drive cattle, but that doesn't work with sheep. No, you have to lead sheep. And he says, my sheep hear my voice and follow. Well, he protected, he provided, he led, he instructed. And then he corrected, disciplined, and forgave them when they were in sin. And these three, correcting, disciplining, forgiving, again, unless I'm walking in the light, unless I'm abiding in Jesus, unless I'm filled with his spirit, unless I'm yielded and loving as he does, well, I don't really want to correct people. It doesn't come natural to me. I'm uncomfortable disciplining people. I mean, my own kids, I knew that was my job and I did my best there. But I never thought, well, you know, beyond. Now, my wife, she's a little different. They used to call her the Durham cop, by the way, when we lived down there. She saw kids fighting. She'd say, pull over. I'm like, those are big kids, you know. I'm not pulling over. She'd just get out of the car and get in their face. Hey, you stop that right now. Like, she thought she was everybody's mom. And the weird thing is they would listen to her. You stop talking like that right now. I don't care. You know, you're not going to talk like that in my presence. And man, I love that example. And I'm seeing it. And well, again, it doesn't come natural to me. So I need the Lord's empowerment if I'm going to correct and discipline our youth pastors, and I feel for them because, you know, sometimes there are problems in the family and it's not all the teens' problems. So there'll be sort of a get together. And because they're dealing with the youth, they get to deal with the youth's parents. And it's a little awkward to be 30 and dealing with somebody who's 50 and you know, there's problems in the kids. And well, the bottom line is there's a call. And I believe this call's on all and it's to love as Jesus loved. We need to correct. We need to discipline. And man, we need to forgive. How often do we need to forgive? As often as someone sins against us. We talked about it last time. It will continue to come up. Why? Because that's what Jesus did for us. He forgave us all of it. And now he tells us to forgive one another. We need to love practically because he did. We need to love sacrificially because he did. Jesus said, greater love has no man than to lay down his life for his friends. He said, the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. And so he's saying, we're his friends and we're his sheep. But we need to remember that he died for us. He doesn't command us or call us at this point, at least, to die for him. But he does call us to die to self, that we might live for him. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. That's how one of the Gospels puts it. Another says, deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow him. Either way, it means the same. So we need to love as he did, practically, and then sacrificially, and then finally, observably. And you can be sure that people who don't read the Bible are reading you. We used to sing a song that said so, and it was kind of cool how it all came together. But the bottom line is at work, at school, at play, in the neighborhood, wherever you are, there are people who never, ever pick up the Bible. But they know that you claim to be a Christian, so they're just watching you. And they're saying, okay, show me what a Christian is. Show me how a Christian acts. Show me how a Christian responds. And so it's essential. And now it all starts to come into focus. By this, we know that we know him if we keep his commandments. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I've loved you. Well, we need to keep all his commandments, but no commandment is greater than the commandment to love God and love one another and to love as Jesus loved us. Well, even when we do our best, we'll fail. You know that. Ultimately, we try and well, we find, well, we're still in the flesh. We still have to struggle with our old carnal sin nature. And so only Jesus was ever able to say, which of you convicts me of sin? That falls into the category of questions you never want to ask at home. Which of you convicts me of sin? Well, we've all got a list, Dad. The deal is everybody could convict us. Anyone could convict us of sin, but no one could convict him of sin. And it goes back to why he was the acceptable sacrifice, the propitiation, the satisfaction for sin. See, even his enemies realized they couldn't convict him of sin. They had to get false witnesses at his trial. the centurion at the cross. Surely this was a righteous man. Judas, I've betrayed innocent blood. Pilate, I find no fault in this man. The thief on the cross, we deserve what we're getting. He's done nothing wrong. They all saw it, you see. Jesus was doing it right. And because he did, and now he's saying, abide in me. Walk with me. Be intimate with me. And I can make this happen in and through you. Finally, he says in verse 9, he who says he's in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. What's he saying? That when someone says, I'm walking in the light, and remember, these are all synonyms. I'm walking in truth. I'm walking in obedience. I'm walking in love. He says, if we're saying that, but we're walking in darkness, we're deceived. We're deceiving ourselves, but we're really not deceiving others. And by the way, this is another reason we know we found the truth and we've connected with the true and living God. Do you know that that whole culture of death that would suggest that, well, they call them suicide bombers. They really aren't. They're homicide bombers. A suicide would be somebody killing himself. A homicide is killing someone else. And well, the whole idea that I am going to achieve a righteousness acceptable to God by murdering all these innocent people. No, listen, it's so warped. I don't know how anybody could even believe it, but it's tragic and you're aware of it. There are far too many that have bought into it. And when people say, this is the way, they believe that's the way to please God. That's the way to heaven. That's the way to glorify God. Killing innocent people. No, Jesus says it's about saving guilty people. He didn't come to condemn, but to save. He didn't come to destroy, but to save. And so, well, we see it. The Bible, the New Testament, it's a culture of life. The purpose, the plan, the promise is life eternal and life abundant. And that's what we share. That's why we love our enemies. We don't blow them up. That's why we do good to them and pray for them. It's not our heart to see any perish, but all come to repentance. Why? Because that's the heart of God. If we say we're in the light, John says, and we're walking in hatred, and he'll develop this theme in great detail later on in the book. So he's just introducing the contrast. He says, well, still in darkness, still spiritually blind, still stumbling around in the darkness. But if we're loving our brother, we're abiding in the light, and we aren't going to stumble, not ourselves nor them. Hating our brother is the evidence we're still in darkness, walking in darkness. And he says that one does not know where he's going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Well, love for one another, evidence we're walking with Jesus, that we're abiding in Jesus. And a new commandment, he says, I give you, that you love one another as I've loved you.
Now, this all helps us take on a new meaning of the loving of our enemies. It's one thing to say that we must love our enemies, and so many times we can stop right at the point of convincing ourselves that we don't hate them. Well, that should be good enough, right? Well, is that where Jesus stopped? Romans 5:10 tells us, "For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son." So no, that's not where he stopped. He took action on their behalf, even though most of them did not ask him to or even want him to. Yet he still died for them. For you and I to take action on behalf of our enemies, we must know what that action is. And that's to love them in a practical manner, to pray for them, to pursue them, to encourage them, to provide for them in ways as such you are able. But to do this, you must ask, well, who is my enemy? I don't really have any enemies to speak of, so maybe this doesn't apply to me. Well, you and I were once considered enemies of God before we were reconciled to him. Wouldn't it stand to reason that anyone who remains unsaved would still be considered an enemy of God? I can't think of them as my enemy, but since we are one with Christ, perhaps we need to pursue them as such. Well, there you go. Those are the ones you need to love in a practical manner, those whom you must pray for, those whom you must pursue and encourage. And this will allow Jesus' death for them on the cross to mean something for them, just like it has for you and I.
The Calvary Road is a ministry of Calvary Chapel Chico, and you can visit our website, ccchico.com, or download the CC Chico app to contact us and listen to other studies from Pastor Sam. You can also listen to The Calvary Road as a daily podcast by visiting thecalvaryroad.com. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time, may you find grace and peace as your journey takes you down the Calvary Road.
And your grace.